Welcome to The Buzz. I'm Christopher Conover. This week, where political campaigns get their money. The cost of running for office in the U.S. continues to go up. High-profile contests can range from millions for a seat in the U.S. House of Representatives to hundreds of millions for the presidency. So where does all of that money come from? Mostly donations from supporters of the candidate, be they voters or outside groups. And those donations are disclosed regularly in campaign finance reports. To start this week's episode, we spoke with Mike Noble. He's a pollster with Noble Predictive Insights. He starts by answering how closely the dollars in a campaign match public opinion of a candidate.
You know, there's certain what I call like key performance indicators, just like you have in corporate life. And what we find is that, you know, polling is a great measurement. And as a nationally recognized pollster, I'm obviously a huge fan of polling. But I personally think the more you can have an understanding of the overall view of the playing field, because polling tells you what people's sentiment is. Well, the next key indicator is also cash or campaign finance. And why it's important is because what are the resources? So, for example, like, let's say, Chris, you and I were hypothetically going against each other in a political election. I'm out 10 points in the polls or whatever, right? But you look at the campaign finance and I raised some money, but I got no cash available. Like I got no gas in the tank when, especially in the last 30 days of the election, when folks are most paying attention. If I go dark in those last 30 days because I don't have the resources, I'm probably going to end up losing that race. It's important to know these indicators. And I guess to bring it all back to is money end all be all. It's not. It used to be if someone had more money, it was like 90% of the time person with more money would win. But that was before like the technology developments, like these different modes or mediums of communication. I mean, it looks nothing like what it was 10 years ago.
When it comes to money and polling and awareness, you mentioned ads, especially the last 30 days, you know, you're up on TV, yard signs. But do discussions like this where reporters sit around and we talk about, oh, so-and-so has a lot of money and so-and-so is burning through it more quickly, does any of this stuff play into that?
Yeah, no, it does. So when you look at campaigns and how that impacted the money aspect is that, well, first rule in politics is that perception is reality when it comes to campaigning. Campaigns are all about a showing of strength, momentum. Like when you see folks rolling out these different coalitions and things like that, they don't really have a really material impact. But what they do is show this momentum, because that's what running for office is basically a short-term marketing campaign. The only thing is we have a guaranteed end date. So when you're running that campaign, it's important to be cognizant of the resources. For example, the GOP primary for U.S. Senate to take on Mark Kelly. When he was running, he had Kelly Ward, Martha McSally, and Joe Arpaio. And what's interesting is that McSally kind of more moderate McCain type, you know, Ward more like Trump mega type, and then Arpaio, he's just Arpaio. And so
he's Joe Arpaio, right?
he's Joe. I'll leave it at that. And so when you look at that, it was funny that McSally was up, but you noticed Ward was steadily gaining. When you looked at the campaign finance reports, it was telling because you could see the trend. She was spending the money basically as she was getting it. What you saw was that she was gaining ground, but she was gaining ground because she was spending the money where McSally was holding on to her cash because she knew voters weren't paying attention maybe as much, but she was kind of keeping her powder dry. And then it got her to being competitive. But the problem was is that ran out of gas and then McSally basically unleashed and absolutely ended up crushing her and will end up winning the race by 20 points. Remember, it's a campaign. It's not who's qualified, et cetera. It's who wins the popularity contest, right? Campaigning, there's a science to it. I've seen it time and time again where folks were that one who's absolutely more qualified gets absolutely shellacked.
And we've seen that plenty of times. And you're right. Sometimes those fundamentals also come down to not only how much money you've raised, but when you decide to spend it and where you decide to spend it.
Correct. You typically see a trend is that, so one of the key indicators you look at is, so if you're ever bored on a Friday, Saturday evening and you want to go look at campaign finance reports.
Sadly, we do that here, but yeah.
You know, more people should. One of the indicators to look at is not, because a lot of people say, oh, so-and-so raised $1 million or $3 million, et cetera. And that shows, you know, support. Think of it as like investors. Like if I had a startup, so there's one point there, but the other part is like how much cash do they have? Because at the beginning of campaign, you have startup costs, just like any organization, right? But then do those costs stay pretty high? Or do you usually have a lot of costs and then usually kind of keep things super lean and then to kind of use the rest in the last 3 months of the race?
When it comes to campaign finance, one of the things we're looking at in this show and a lot of people look at, we'll take the U.S. Senate race that's going on right now, money coming in from out of state. When voters hear, oh, candidate A is getting all this money from out of state, does that reflect in the polls? Do people say, oh, wait a minute, who is this person? Or is that just considered part of the game and nobody cares?
I think it's kind of more considered part of the game because I think the average voter, it's hard to disseminate. But they know like the outside groups because the kind of current campaign structure, at least of modern day politics, especially since McCain-Feingold ruling on campaign finance, you basically have the campaigns, they will run full positive messaging. And then the outside groups basically are the attack dogs. And what we found is that where it does impact polling, let's say you and I are hypothetically going against each other. And I saw, you know, Chris is bad, he's terrible, this and the other. Thing is that when you do the attacks, yes, I'll damage you a little bit, but I'll actually lose more. And you think that, oh, you would gain, especially if other candidates in the race. So that's why you have the outside groups doing it, because voters don't really connect the campaign committee to the outside because it's just so prevalent in there. Because you look at Republicans and Democrats, and U.S. Senate is a good example you provided because a crap load of money goes into those. The only thing bigger than that is president. But like Senate blows out of the water the spend compared to like congressional races. And so vast majority of the funds on both sides of the aisle are coming, frankly, from out of state. Like there's not a lot of money, frankly, here in the desert. Unlike, you know, states like Virginia, perfect example. I talk to consultants over there and they say, hey, just to be competitive, just throw your hand in the ring for a state legislative seat. You got to have $1 million at least. And here, I've never seen a legislative candidate with $1 million ever, let alone like if they had like 250,000, that's like our version of $1 million.
You and I have talked U.S. Senate races because we have them every 2 years currently, it seems.
Yep. Our fifth U.S. Senate seat in a row.
Each time they get more and more expensive, will this U.S. Senate race probably be an absolute record setter when it comes to money?
It's going to be close. The only reason why is that Mark Kelly, he's the best fundraiser I've ever seen in Arizona. That dude was a money machine. He was, I think, at one point ranked the most prolific fundraiser in the country of all U.S. Senate, not only challengers, but then I think even among incumbents outside of maybe like leadership. But Rubin, you know, I think he's on a good pace. But what you're seeing is right now this dynamic we've seen play out the last three election cycles. When it comes to U.S. Senate spending, there's a massive imbalance between the sheer amount of money Democrats have and how much less of it Republicans have. Last cycle, the top 10 Senate races, Republicans were literally outspent significantly in some of those races. They were more efficient. The Republicans' cost per vote was great. The thing is, they just had a lot more tonnage. And so the U.S. Senate races, and we're seeing the same trend. Like, but look at Rubin raised, what, just this last quarter, 7-some million. Carrie Lake raised 2.5, 3, which is good, but it never hurts to have more money, you know, to buy more billboards, to do more direct messaging, like, you know, all of this stuff that you do. I think Democrats have an innate advantage, especially on the U.S. Senate level, that Republicans are still trying to catch up on, frankly.
That was Mike Noble of Noble Predictive Insights. Joining me now to talk about what's in campaign finance reports for two races that will top the ballot in November is the Buzz producer, Zach Ziegler.
Thanks for having me, Chris. Always good to be on the other side of the microphone.
Well, it is a rarity, but it is nice to have you on this side of the mic and this side of the glass. And for our listeners, they're going to get a little secret. You and I love big data. And when it comes to campaign finance, that's big data. So before we talk about what we found in the FEC data, let me set this up for our listeners just so they understand. Individuals, people like you, me, and all of our listeners, can give $3,300 to a federal candidate this year and last year per election. And that means $3,300 in the primary and then $3,300 again for the general election. Zach, we looked at, for the purposes of this, the federal elections, presidential and U.S. Senate. Let's start with presidential. I looked specifically at donors in Arizona for President Biden and former President Trump for the first quarter of this year, and you looked at the full year. The first thing of note, when we looked at zip codes, who's giving to these candidates from Arizona, there's a lot of overlap.
Yeah, and we opened up my searches to the whole time that people have been running for president in 2024 so that we could include Nikki Haley a little more easily, get a bigger sample of her numbers. We also included the independent Robert F. Kennedy Jr. in those numbers. One really interesting thing was all four of them had two zip codes in their top three for giving, their Scottsdale area zip codes, 85253 and 85255. After that, things got a little different for everyone, but very interesting that those two were first, second, or third for everyone.
And I know for President Trump in the first quarter, because that's what I was really looking at, that zip code up near Lake Pleasant in Phoenix was his big donation area. For the first quarter, I believe on your notes, it was the number two for him for the whole election cycle. And then down here in Pima County for President Biden, it was Foothills area, 85718, that was the number two in the first quarter.
Yeah, so how about let's hop over to another topic. We talked about big dollars. Let's talk about the big donors. President Biden has been doing quite well there amongst Arizonans. He's had 53 people give him $6,000+, making up about $350,000. We can compare that to former President Trump, who had one such donor. It's a name we may all recognize, Blake Masters.
Who's running for Congress again, ran for U.S. Senate 2 years ago. And again, all of these numbers for our listeners are just what's happening in Arizona.
Yes.
And President Trump, interestingly, had a lot of small dollar donors. You and I noticed one individual who has given hundreds and hundreds of donations, and some of them as small as a penny to President Trump.
Yeah, and that seemed to be something that happened a lot with his campaign. He had 62,000 donations in Arizona. About 1,300 of those were for a penny. And if you up that to a nickel or less, that was about 3,300 donors. By comparison, President Biden, we're talking about 9,000 donations, with only about 10 of them being a dollar or less. For Nikki Haley, we saw about 18,000 donations, about 500 of a dollar or less. And for Robert F. Kennedy Jr., about 2,700 donations, and he had one donation of $1. Everything else was larger than that.
Those are some of the high points for what presidential candidates have pulled in from Arizona. Now we head to the race for an open U.S. Senate seat in the state.
Well, that race still has three notable competitors. Democratic Congressman Ruben Gallego has his party's nomination all but sewn up. If we head to the Republican side, former news anchor Carrie Lake is seen as the front runner, but Pinal County Sheriff Mark Lamb isn't letting her get away that easily. We also pulled down some data from independent incumbent Kyrsten Sinema, who dropped out of the race early last month.
So let's start with a topic we heard about from Mike Noble earlier, out-of-state donations. Zach, this is something we both looked at in our research. You did the numbers and I did the maps. So give our audience the basics, or basics with the details, about what we found.
At this point, Mark Lamb, who is the candidate with the lesser amount of money, he has the largest amount of his money coming from within Arizona, a little over 70%. That's followed by Carrie Lake. About 44% of her money comes from within the state. Kyrsten Sinema had about 28% of her money, and Ruben Gallego about 22% from within the state. And Gallego, he's received about $1 million from people donating from within the state. By comparison, if you're wondering where that money's coming from outside of Arizona, he had about $900,000 from California and $400,000 from New York State.
And taking a look at Carrie Lake, she got about $1.1 million from Arizona and about $250,000 from California and Texas. And Mark Lamb pulled from Texas, but not too much, about $8,800.
Yeah, and Kirsten Sinema, the D.C. area, what she received from there was about equal to what she was receiving in Arizona contributions before she dropped out. But of note, as we mentioned, Sinema and Lamb there, their donations both get small enough that one max donor can really throw things. For an example here, Sinema's next state on her list was Nebraska, and that's because she had one max donor there.
And who was that? It's of note.
Yeah, that was the governor of Nebraska's wife.
One of the other things we looked at, again, something we spoke with Mike Noble about, were events and fundraising. For Senate candidates, one of the big events was Carrie Lake's feud with Jeff DeWitt. He was, at the time, the head of the Arizona Republican Party. He eventually resigned. As that came to a head on January 23rd and 24th, Carrie Lake had big fundraising days. On the 24th of January, she raised $34,000. The day before, in comparison, $13,000.
Yeah, and another big week for Lake, she raised more than $600,000 within a week of declining to defend against a defamation lawsuit filed by Maricopa County Recorder Stephen Richer.
For Democrat Ruben Gallego, his big days were March 5th and 6th. That's when Kirsten Sinema announced she wasn't running and Senator Mark Kelly endorsed him. On March 5th, he picked up $254,000. The next day, almost $331,000.
And as we looked at the data, we really didn't see dates that stood out for Sinema or Lamb as far as being notably higher than others. Although, interestingly, the day that Kirsten Sinema dropped out of the race, she received $12,000 in donations.
Thanks, Zach, and you and I will be back after we dive into the data again next week when we look at how candidates spend all the money. And for our listeners, make sure to go to the website. We have maps broken down by zip codes and all kinds of charts about all the things we've been talking about, so you as our listeners can see what we did and join us in the fun that is data.
Any excuse to build an overly elaborate spreadsheet. So I'll see you then, Chris.
Arizona is in its first election cycle where a new voter-approved law about campaign finance is in effect. It requires groups that have no formal association with a candidate to disclose their largest donors publicly. To learn about how that law might affect our upcoming election, I spoke with former Arizona Attorney General Terry Goddard, who organized the effort around the new dark money law. He starts by giving us a status update of the law, which has been the subject of several legal challenges.
We're in business. I guess that's the critical thing to say, is that ever since the election was certified on December 5th, 2022, the statute that the voters approved by 72% is the law in Arizona. There were challenges, and a lot of people got confused because as soon as they read there was a challenge, they assumed that there had been an injunction, but there wasn't. None of the courts have given any consideration of granting an injunction. So we had the challenges. Every one has been now resolved in trial court favorably to the voters' opinion about having better transparency. So I'm very pleased with that.
As we really start ramping up this election season, for people who maybe voted for this or maybe didn't vote for it when it was up, what does all this mean as we really get into election season now that it's in effect?
Well, it means that, and it is a fairly limited group that it affects, and that is if you're a major donor to what used to be considered dark money organizations, in other words, 501c4 advocacy nonprofits, whose business is to hide the identity of the contributors. If you were one of those and you give over $5,000, you now have to be disclosed. And the other sort of operative word is you've got to be the original donor. So what we found a lot of was people would, was literally a daisy chain of contributions. I'd give to you, you'd give to somebody else, they'd give to a third party, all with funny names like Citizens for Peanut Butter. And eventually it would get spent for political advertising. What Prop 211 has done is it says, look, you can do that. That's not illegal, but you got to tell us where the original source was.
Now, I know as a reporter, I'm not allowed to publicly get behind groups, but I could get behind Citizens for Peanut Butter because it is a major staple of my diet. But if I wanted to find out who that is, do these groups have to report just like all the other candidates and groups that report in the state, or do they report somewhere special if I'm a member of the public and want to go see who's behind Citizens for Peanut Butter?
It's at the Secretary of State's website. The organization that has to do the reporting is the one that spends the money. So if I'm X, Y, and Z advocacy nonprofit and I spend $100,000 for candidate Z and several of my contributors were over $5,000, then I've got to tell the state, the Secretary of State, within 5 days who they were. Failing that, I can't spend the money without getting fined.
The natural place we'll see a lot of this is the various ballot initiatives coming in, especially this year. It looks like we're going to have a lot of them. Will this law pertain to federal candidates, be they congressional or very high-profile U.S. Senate race?
Well, I would have loved to have said yes, but no, a state law can't apply to federal candidates. They're governed by something called the Federal Elections Commission.
Now, I know, having talked to you over the years, this is obviously something you've been passionate about for years. The late Senator McCain put in a number, or tried to put in a number of restrictions, McCain-Feingold being one of the better known ones. What are you hearing on the national level? Is something like this ever going to come along for presidential, congressional, U.S. Senate candidates, or is this just going to stay at the states?
Yeah, that's a great question and a hard one to answer. I hope it eventually is a federal law. We've been in contact with some of the senators, White House in particular. Senator White House from Delaware is Rhode Island, is a strong proponent of full disclosure and has been very out front about it. The Disclose Act has been pending. It was passed by the House at the beginning of this current administration, but has been stalled in the Senate, largely because Mitch McConnell hates transparency. It's a challenge, and here's the challenge. I find that citizens are overwhelmingly in favor. In fact, I can't get a single person when I was passing petitions to say, you know, I'd rather not know who's paying for the ads that I'm watching. The general population is over here, and many of the elected representatives, especially here in Arizona, are on completely other side. You know, the Prop 211 passed by 72%. And frankly, I think it was even more popular than that because our polling all showed us in the high 80s. There was a little confusion, I know, with the way it was phrased on the ballot, the way the wording was. And I think we lost maybe 10% because of that. So think about this. Here's something that 90% of Arizonans think should be the law and support, and the legislature would never give it a hearing. So the only thing I draw from that is that there are certain politicians who are either beholden to dark money or would like to be in the future, are afraid to death that the dark money forces are going to primary them and knock them out of their office. Unfortunately, what was true in the Arizona legislature is probably true in Congress as well. I'm not as up to speed about that, but I think some of the same fears exist, and it's a bipartisan fear.
So it's campaign finance time, at least on the federal level. The state is following along. I don't know if you've looked at any of the reports. Have there been any surprises you've seen? If you have looked at it, like, oh, is that where that money is coming from?
Well, there haven't been yet, because many times we had a pretty good suspicion as to what was happening. We just didn't have proof. Now we know who it is that's spending, and we'll be able to evaluate the message in terms of the messenger of who's paying for the ads to be placed. I expect some surprises. We're still relatively early in the campaign contribution season. I expect the heavy expenditures will hit us sometime around primary election day.
Coming to our TVs soon.
Yeah, right. I mean, there's several levels that this will be involving. It's not just the disclosure of the Secretary of State. There's an on-air disclosure requirement. I mean, I don't expect blockbuster revelations, but here's the thing. Back in 2014, when we had a statewide election for two corporation commissioners, our friendly neighborhood utility here in Phoenix appeared to be involved, although they would never admit it. They basically said along the lines of, we can neither confirm nor deny that APS is involved in these campaigns. But they never confirmed that they, in fact, were paying. As it turned out later, 5 years later, we found out $10 million was spent to promote those two candidates. And they got elected, and then they voted very favorably for rate increases. No laws were broken, but the fact that would be different under this situation was you would have to say on the ad that it was brought to you by contributions from the utility that's being regulated by the people that are seeking election. I think that would have an impact. And I think now at least you will know for sure who it is that's spending those checks.
All right, we will find out. Thanks for spending some time with us.
Thank you.
That was Terry Goddard, organizer of the Outlaw Dark Money campaign. And that's The Buzz for this week. Tune in next week as we look at how the money donated to campaigns is spent. You can find all our episodes online at azpm.org and subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for The Buzz Arizona. We're also on the NPR app. Zach Ziegler is our producer with production help from Desiree Tucker. Our music is by Enter the Haggis. I'm Christopher Conover. Thanks for listening.
AZPM's original productions are made possible in part by the Community Service Grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and by donations from listeners like you. Learn more at support.azpm.org.